Thank you. I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. How's everybody doing out there today? All right. Well, I'm going to start off by reading the long form and then the short form and just give you a little bit of overview how we got to the point we are today with the third tradition. And what this talks about, first of all, is our common welfare. And, you know, that was in our early literature, what an importance that brings to here. And so what I'm going to read here is, if I can write here, our membership, this is the original long form of this tradition. It says, our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover, nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation. So that's the original long form. Now, what we're used to today, and you hear at all your meetings and stuff, is the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking, period. And this has some controversy. You know, if you read our history, and what I am, I'm the archives chair for Area 76. That's Wyoming. My home group is in Casper, Wyoming. It's a sufficient substitute. And if you think of the acronym, you can kind of have an idea of what type of group we are. And my sobriety date is November 6, 1991. Thank you. I didn't do it on purpose. It just kind of happened that way from hanging around you guys. You know, initially there was... because they didn't know. There was paranoia, and that was originally why our anonymity was so important, because Bill thought that, you know, he'd just be overwhelmed, and the early members would be overwhelmed by all these people wanting sobriety. Later on, they found the true purpose of our anonymity is to protect us from our own egos. And so we had some paranoia. Initially, some of the groups had membership rules. And the term sponsor, which we all know what a sponsor is today, initially, your sponsor was the guy that would vouch for you to get into AA. You had to, at one time, actually have somebody that was a member that would vouch for you that you were a trustworthy type and decent person and you're just a drunk. You're a pure drunk. Now, I know that sounds kind of funny, huh? It really does. But you realize that this was all experimental. And so this was all trial and error. But as you read our history, I really advise doing that. You can see there's something in the background that's working, something spiritual. We shouldn't be here today. We shouldn't be here. But it's because out of this experience grew these traditions. But even with our traditions... at first were a little restrictive, you know, and they had so many. One time, when they were putting this together, they had all the groups that were going at that time send in their membership rules, and they had around 100, and these membership rules, if they had been applied everywhere, nobody would have been able to join Alcoholics Anonymous. Now today there's controversial. We have our area delegate right over here. And we discuss this every once in a while jokingly. Does AA need a police force? Because you've all been in meetings and stuff where somebody gets way out there in left field and they're there for a lot of reasons, but not to do anything about drinking. And this is why this tradition is so important, that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. You don't have to be an alkie to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Our traditions do that. And there's a lot of people, because most people, don't even know what AA's definition of an alcoholic is when they get there. You know, this inability to control our drinking. And we've been told a lot of things from different sources and things. So it's important for that new person to let them in that they can decide when they are consider themselves an alcoholic. All they need is a desire to not drink. You know, if they're sick and tired of being sick and tired and want to find something else, that's a starting point. And that's how all of our traditions, our steps, you know, our three legacies, our unity, you know, our recovery, and our service are all based in spiritual principles. And this really does open the door. We're not a closed society. We're open to everybody. I'm seeing how I'm doing on time. I think I'm doing all right. Give you a little idea in where I'm from. I'm District 6, Area 76. And so we're kind of out in the middle. We're the least populated state in the Union, Wyoming is. But in my hometown, which is about 60,000, we have 15 registered groups, and we have 65 meetings a week. So we got plenty of drunks. It might have something to do. We got a lot of sheep out there, not too many women, but a lot of sheep. So either it's sheep or drinking, whichever one. Uh-oh, I got the delegate and the alternate delegate giving me the one finger wave. You know, it took time, and we had to go through this because everybody has groups, and it really has to do with your group dynamics. And you have people that come to AA sometimes for different reasons. Sometimes some people have some mental issues, and you probably all know what I'm talking about. And they can be disruptive in meetings and things like that, or they got some other type of malady that they're trying to find some direction, someplace. And that's the job where we do cooperation. It's, you know, we've worked a lot, I'm going to bring up their name, Narcotics Anonymous, and AA and NA on a national level. It's our responsibility. If the guy's a drug addict, get him to where he's going to get some help. Get him to an NA meeting. You know, don't tell him that he can't come to AA. Try and steer him to what's going to be beneficial for that. You know, our only aim is to try and be beneficial to whatever their ailment is. But banning people, and we have had that happen too, where, you know, somebody's disruptive. I've seen in meetings where they've actually had to call the real police, and none of us like them. Unless they're in the program, then we cut them a little slack. But, you know, we also have that right, is you can't let somebody come in and totally disrupt your meeting. If they're drunk, and I think that's good for meetings to get active drunks in there, personally. But we have set up through a group conscience where we have a couple guys will take them out and talk to them, and, you know, if they want some help, try and get them some help, something like that. So, again, the importance of the home group. You know, I was told when I first started in this deal, the traditions are only as important to you as your home group is. So the key thing, and I had one of these where I came in at, we have these old cowboys, and I know I don't look like maybe your cowboy you're used to looking at, but mine was a rodeo cowboy. He's quite famous in the 50s, and I didn't like him at all, but he kept talking about this book that I wasn't familiar with called The Big Book, and I finally, because I couldn't stay dry, out of desperation, he caught me in a weak moment, and I asked him to sponsor me. And this guy had, if you wanted him as a sponsor, certain things you did, like join his home group so he could hear what kind of BS you're running down at meetings. Yeah. And as soon as you were able, you met with him once a week. You worked the steps. As soon as you were able, you started working in group activities. You started sponsoring people. You got where you worked in district, maybe eventually into area, but you didn't say no to this stuff. You know, this is giving back to AA. And at the end of our 11th step, it tells us faith without works is dead. And how I interpret that and what it kind of leads to is, you know, the first 11 steps really get us in preparation for one thing, and that's so we can effectively carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to the next suffering alcoholic. That's really what this deal's about. Yeah. And tradition three helps ensure that. How many of you came in and were unique? Right. Well, I was too. You know, I got, I happened to end up being a guest of the state of Wyoming when I was 19. And they said, while you're here, it'd be a good idea if you went to the AA meetings. And I didn't mind because I was on a locked ward in a state insane asylum. And they had coffee there and once a month cake. And so I would go down and listen to them old burned out guys in their 30s and 40s. And I thought, you know, these guys really need this stuff. But it planted a seed. See, I was unique. I was too young at that time and I was too pretty. And I thought, I'm too good looking to be an alcoholic. They look like guys like, Larry back there. And so this tradition three helps us start getting rid of a little bit of that uniqueness, where we start looking at what's similar with us. You know, do I have control over my drinking or don't I have control? Do I want to stop drinking or do I want to continue drinking? You know, AA is very polite because it allows me to make those choices. I don't have to have somebody dictating to me, because I had plenty of that. I had a lot of good judges and wives and institutions, all that telling me, John, don't drink. And what they didn't understand is I didn't have the power to stop and stay stopped. I didn't understand that for a long time. And it was finally through desperation that I was drawn in to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had finally given up. I just figured I'd eventually die drunk on the streets. And that's when I experienced a psychic change and was able to actually become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to become a part. And it's because of this traditions that we can become a part. And it starts out with this simple thing. The membership, the only thing I need to do is have a desire not to drink, and I can be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So please convey that in your groups, stuff. And I'm not saying we do need, you know, some formats and stuff like that in AA. It's not total chaos, so some of it gets kind of fun. Again, let's not try and bar people because maybe they have other ailments or maladies too. As long as they have a desire to stop drinking, then they can become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we want to thank you from Wyoming for letting us attend this deal. You know, most things won't let people from Wyoming come. And so I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
All right, thank you, John. They said in my instructions I could comment briefly, and I won't, except I do like that, sending drug addicts to NA and doing it in a loving sort of way. I like that. I approve of that. Okay, so now we got Chase from Oregon by way of Orlando, right?
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for showing up. I'm Chase. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm not from Orlando, but I did. The last time I was in Orlando, I was in handcuffs, but that's not for today's presentation. No, I wasn't sober yet. And no, I wasn't a member yet. I've got sober February 3rd, 1995, and my home group is the Just for Today group in Medford, Oregon. Is everybody having fun in Atlanta? All right. Sweet. On that note, I showed up in AA 20 years ago in the spring of 1994, and this is the shit I have. I don't want to say shit. Can't do that. I gotta conform. I had a bike with no front tire and an empty suitcase. I was homeless. And it was important to me that you thought I had some stuff, so that's why I carried around an empty suitcase. Because like any self-respecting egomaniac, I needed you to think that I had some stuff. I have nothing, my mom would say I didn't have a bucket to piss in or a window to throw it out of, but I need you to think that I have some stuff. It's just shocking to me. I'm all better now, though. What was amazing about you guys, and I'm talking about my AA brothers and sisters, is that you guys met me where I was when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. It was the Medford Alano Club. I already told you it was the spring of 1994. And I wasn't doing real well as a member of anything in my life. I wasn't a good family member. I wasn't a good member of the workplace. Actually, I had recently been shown the door. And you know, the alcoholic, the first thing you think of when you get fired is, you'll be sorry. Well, the company thrived after they dumped my ass. I wasn't a member of the country club, because, you know, they weren't going with the bike and no front tire thing. I was a member of the local gospel rescue mission, but I had broken their membership rules, and so they had shown me the door as well. And that's a real low moment of clarity thing when you get kicked out of the, or you lose your membership at the local homeless shelter. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and you did the most amazing thing. You made me feel a part of. You put me in a position to connect. I didn't at first, but it was available to me. And I hadn't even declared my membership yet. I came into AA and I went to an open AA meeting for my very first meeting. And because I had learned at a treatment center a little bit of stuff, and I identified myself as an alcoholic and an addict because I had done some drugs. Drugs are part of my story. I had a drug of choice. Actually, I had a lot of drugs of choice. But alcohol, I didn't have a choice with alcohol. It chose me. I never did have a choice with that. But I came in and I did that, and you guys didn't, after a couple meetings, you guys didn't pull me, you know, in mid-share. You pulled me aside because you had class and you had education about your tradition three and your singleness of purpose. And you pulled me aside and you lovingly and graciously told me about our singleness of purpose. And it was clear and obvious that alcohol had been a problem for me. So you didn't direct me to Narcotics Anonymous. We had a little chat and I learned a little bit at that time. I learned eyeball to eyeball, alcoholic to alcoholic about our singleness of purpose and about our third tradition. I told you about my background, you know, that I did come from that. But what I needed to do after you helped educate me was I needed to recognize that I was an alcoholic and then I needed to leave that stuff at the door and not abandon it. But the stuff that I brought in with me, I didn't have a place in Alcoholics Anonymous in the way that I was sharing. You said share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like today. It wasn't all that rosy and fun. There was one old-timer, we'll call him Crusty Rusty. He was in the back of the room. Actually, he's not here, I'll tell him. His name was Jake. Anyway, actually, that's not his name either. He was kind of a jerk, and he said, all you need to remember about singleness of purpose in Tradition 3 is give freely what you find here, not all the crap you brought here. Yeah, I'll repeat that. Give freely what you find here, not what you brought here. So is a desire to stop drinking enough? If I join the local racquetball club, am I going to get mad racquetball skills after I pay my $8? Yeah, I'm wondering. So before we look at that question, let me back up for a second. So we've already heard the long tradition read and the short tradition. Bill Wilson in 1945 and 1946 rolled out a bunch of essays in your AA Grapevine publication that resulted in what became your second legacy, your 12 traditions. And we've all heard they were called the 12 points to ensure our future. In one of those essays called Anarchy Melts, I'll just quote from it. He talks about tradition three and I quote, point three in our AA tradition looks like a wide open invitation to anarchy. It reads, our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover. Nor ought AA membership ever depend on money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group. This, and Bill goes on to say, and I continue to quote, this clearly implies that an alcoholic is a member if he says so, that we can't deny him his membership, that we can't demand from him assent, that we can't force our beliefs or our practices upon him, that he may flout everything we stand for and still be a member. In fact, our tradition carries the principle of independence for the individual to such an apparently fantastic length that so long as there is the slightest interest in sobriety, the most unmoral, the most unmoral, the most antisocial, the most critical alcoholic, that is us, may gather about him a few kindred spirits and announce to us that a new AA group has been formed. This is a quote from Bill. Anti-God, anti-medicine, anti-our recovery program, even anti-each other. These rampant individuals are still an AA group if they think so. End quote. Boy, howdy, Bill. That's heavy. It really is. So in its base form, at least in the long form, it gives us the basic ideas about not only what membership is and isn't, but what groups are and are not. So you remember the racquetball club that I mentioned? I think that there's more going on if you want measurable results in anything you join, whether you're talking about racquetball clubs or recovery from alcoholism. There's more going on than just the base requirements. There's operational requirements as well. Here's some stuff that I've tried in Alcoholics Anonymous, which I'll admit I've had mixed results with. Working the steps, being sponsored, sponsoring, showing up for business meetings, voting, being of service, listening to others. The listening to others part I kind of suck at. Sharing what I learn. The list goes on. And let's not forget about the stuff that I've tried as an AA member that is kind of peripheral to our membership requirements. Things that I've tried that are more culture and fellowship than they are explicit or implicit requirements. Voting and not prevailing on the vote. This is just my stuff, guys. Whining about the outcome of that vote. Calling my sponsor about that vote. Being told to turn my attention to others about that vote. Helping be a part of the Alcoholics Anonymous life. Meeting a girl on the AA campus. Getting married in AA. Getting divorced in AA. Loaning money to someone in AA. Whining when they run off with the money. We could increase the list ad infinitum. No, that stuff is not membership stuff, but can we really separate these life experiences from our AA membership? What I was told when I came in was that if you want what Alcoholics Anonymous has to offer, then do what Alcoholics Anonymous members do. So it's through Tradition 3 that we learn that these are base requirements for membership, and it's been my experience that I've mentioned that there's operational requirements too. So what about drugs in AA membership? So I already told you about my experience learning to leave that stuff at the door out of respect for our singleness of purpose. Bill covers this topic masterfully in many of his AA published writings. It's worth noting that the practice of this tradition could also address stuff beyond drugs that folks bring in here with them. Sex addiction, gambling, food, different topics along those lines. But I am convinced that the lesson that we've learned long ago is that as long as you're an alcoholic, none of this other stuff can keep you from becoming an AA member. We've also learned that it's our principle of singleness of purpose that allows folks to come in with this other stuff and not let it obscure their message of recovery from alcoholism. So in digging through this stuff, I came across the amazing Problem Other Than Alcohol excerpts pamphlet. Okay, very cool. So this is basically a Cliff Notes version of the more broadly popular Problems Other Than Alcohol pamphlet. And this kind of is stripped down to the four basic questions that Bill throws out there in Problems Other Than Alcohol. In the excerpts pamphlet, they actually answer them head on. Here's the questions, and I quote, can a non-alcoholic pill or drug addict become an AA member? No. Can such a person be brought as a visitor to an open AA meeting for inspiration and help? Yes. If so, should these non-alcoholic pill or drug users be led to believe that they can become AA members? No. And number four, can a pill or drug taker, thank goodness for number four here in my case, can a pill or drug taker who also has a genuine alcoholic history become an AA member? Yes. So let's do a quick show of hands, but before we do, remember, if you participate in this little exercise and you identify yourself as a member, that you have a desire to stop drinking, and based on what we've just read as a group, that alcohol was a problem for you. Because we don't want to go with the neutered down version of Tradition 3, which is, doesn't talk about the fact that you'd have to be an alcoholic to be a member of AA. It does mention that in the long form of Tradition 3. So how many AA members do we have in the room today? Excellent. This was not meant to embarrass you, but helpful to get to know you better. Thank you. How many pure guzzlers? This is old Alcoholics Anonymous terminology for the pure alcoholic, that you came in with no other problems than alcohol. How many pure alcoholics do we have? Okay. Wouldn't it suck if we all left right now and you had to be here by yourself? Now, trust me, I'm not implying that singleness of purpose is not important. Contrarily, I'm as much in favor of singleness of purpose as anybody. What we just witnessed, this is my opinion, what we just witnessed underscores the importance and supports the importance of singleness of purpose, because we all came in with other stuff, and if we can't get rid of that stuff and figure out a way to work this thing out, then we're not going to be really good at what AA does, and we want AA to be really good at what AA does. What I've learned is that singleness of purpose, since it's something we've learned after we come in here, is something, it is a membership responsibility, not a characteristic of that defines membership. Does that make sense? It's something that we learn after. It's a responsibility. It doesn't define who we are. Singleness of purpose, membership requirement gets us members. Singleness of purpose helps us be sure that we're effective for the members that are get here, the people that are traveling towards Alcoholics Anonymous right now. I've learned that the traditions are best practiced as rule. They're not best practiced as rules, but principles to be practiced. And if they're principles to be practiced versus rules to be followed, then understanding them is the only real way to connect to them. I've also made the mistake thinking that the traditions have somehow always been with us, that they're self-evident principles that we arrived at long ago and that everything's cool now. There were times when we didn't have these principles. Our friend mentioned the 100 membership rules that people had, and it was obvious that something had to be done. In the pioneering days, we didn't have these principles. Bill mentions the traditions being hammered out on the anvil of group experience, and that's how we got these 12 points that ensure our future. Wouldn't it be weird? Anybody ever read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers? They talk about sniffers at the door in the pioneering days that would sniff to see if you were drunk. Now, all these people in the green shirts all weekend? Well, you get the rest. Wouldn't that be creepy if they were at the door sniffing you out? That would be ringing the bell of the other relevant topic about safety in AA. I want to also talk about my experience with learning the difference between membership requirements and attendance requirements. I remember showing up. I was 60 days sober about 20 years ago, and I figured I was an expert on AA at that time, 60 days sober. And I showed up at a conference kind of like this, and I was incredulous that you guys wanted money for me to get in. So I cited the long form of Tradition 3 and said, you know, y'all can't keep me out of here. I'm a member when I say I am, et cetera, et cetera. And again, you lovingly pulled me aside and explained to me that, yes, while AA does rely on voluntary contributions, sometimes things cost money, and special meetings cost extra money. So to underscore the point, I think that all of us up here would love to do this presentation for you out on the side of the road, out in the humidity, and it would be cool, but isn't air conditioning awesome? I also learned the hard way about conformity. If wherever your church or your group rents meeting hall from, like in the church basement, how many of you have a home group that you rent space for? You pay a dollar or more a year or whatever month to get to it. Well, if your landlord wants shoes worn when I go to that meeting and I got to wear shoes, then I am going to be wearing shoes or I'm not going to be going to your group. I'm going to get a no shirt, no shoes, no service thing. And it's got nothing to do with AA membership and everything to do with just following some rules that landlords have. Sometimes they're basic rules of society, but I've made the error in thinking before that I should be able to just bust down any door and get into any AA meeting I want because I'm a member. On that note, conduct is another one, too. If my conduct sucks, then guess what you're going to do? You're going to ask me to go find another meeting. And when you do that, you're not revoking my AA membership. Nobody can revoke my AA membership. But if my conduct sucks and you make an informed group conscience to ask me to find another meeting to use my AA membership benefits to find another place to go free of charge, then you really what you're doing is you're putting the welfare of your membership ahead of my poor conduct, and for good reason. So an AA member that went by the initials BL from Manhattan, New York, published a series of essays in The Grapevine from 1969 to 1971 that each focused on a single tradition and concluded with a series of questions. These questions are more broadly known today as the Traditions Checklist, published by AA World Services via The Grapevine. These questions are... Well, I'll just go right to them. The Tradition 3 questions really hit home and are a great spot inventory with respect to the principle in this tradition. I quote, "In my mind, do I prejudice some new AA members as losers? Is there some kind of alcoholic whom I privately do not want to in my AA group? Do I set myself up as a judge of whether a newcomer is sincere or phony? Do I let language, religion, race, education, age, or other such things interfere with my carrying the message?" End quote. In closing, I want to thank you for letting me be here today and for the opportunity to learn so much about this vital principle. In another one of Bill's AA published essays, he declares in no uncertain terms, and I'll quote, that we have to confine our membership to alcoholics and we have to confine our groups to a single purpose. For if we don't stick to these principles, we shall almost surely collapse. And if we collapse, we can't help anyone. In his Traditions Checklist writing, it's strong. In his Traditions Checklist writing, the author concludes his Tradition 3 essay with this message. Apparently for me, the price of our AA brotherhood and of our fearless trust of each other, if I want them, is learning unstinting acceptance of others, a love which can be claimed by anyone who wants it. He may not say he wants it or act as if he does, but if the desire is in his heart, even unknown to himself, that is enough. Thank you for letting me share.
Great talk, Chase. Madeline, he approved. Thumbs up. All right. Our last speaker, Annette from Florida.
For the last 2 days, as I went to meetings, I've wondered what it was going to feel like when I stepped up here. I can tell you that it is delightfully delicious. And I can tell you that the fear is something like the first night I tried to sneak back in the house drunk. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Annette, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November the 9th of 1981. That just means I'm very old. My home group is the Early Birds group that meets in Melbourne, Florida. For a poor little drunk who used to whine she had no friends, see what AA gives you. And I want to make sure everybody understands, I live a lot closer to Orlando, Florida than Chase does. I want to thank the committee for inviting me to be here today, and I want to thank my past delegate who sent my name in and helped to give me this opportunity. I want to thank our other two speakers. I love hearing the history of our traditions because it helps me understand their intent. And I actually took some notes when Chase was speaking. I've heard it said, the only people who come to traditions meetings are usually the people who don't need traditions meetings. Besides standing in front of you today, the two most exciting things about my sobriety right now for me are I have six beautiful grandchildren between the ages of 13 and 22 who have never seen me take a drink. And the other personal pride is that I just had one graduate from high school, number 15, in a class of 984 students. Now, those things may well have happened without me being sober, but I may not have been able to partake of them, and I certainly wouldn't have appreciated their meaning. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous have given me. I know that I'm an alcoholic because when I drink, I can't stop. When I drank, I was a different person, and I usually hurt those who loved me, and I probably didn't remember it the next day. I never did what I promised. I never came home when I promised my children I would. I placed them in harm's way, and I robbed my employer of productive hours. Since I found Alcoholics Anonymous, you have taught me how to be a better person. I keep my word, I suit up and show up, and I am able to be of service, and I love being of service to Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyone who talks to me for 5 minutes knows of my love for the traditions and knows how excited I get when I have any opportunity to talk about them. Recently, I was leading a meeting on the third tradition, and a gentleman introduced himself as a newcomer. It was his second meeting. I always worry when newcomers show up at traditions meetings because I'm not sure how it's going to work for them, not quite what they're thinking they're going to hear. But after the meeting, that gentleman came up to me, and he commented to me about how much he had learned. He wasn't sure he belonged here, and he wasn't sure that we would accept him. And he told me now that he knew it would be okay, and that there was hope, and he was going to keep coming back. When I first reviewed those inventory questions that Chase just read you as a newcomer, my answers were wrong. Wrong, wrong. I was closed-minded, judgmental, and quick to assess what was wrong with any different idea or opinion you had, and not bashful in pointing that out to you. Because if you were right, I was wrong. I had a problem listening to others and hearing their message. I didn't want to share with you because I didn't want to hear your criticism. My secrets kept me isolated and apart from you. And I certainly had no message that you wanted to hear. Our third tradition says we may refuse none who wish to recover. When I came to AA, I had little or no feeling of self-worth. I was sure I would not be welcomed if you knew my imagined or actual faults. I was comforted to learn that you would let me in, no matter what my sins, no questions asked. But then there was that nagging little requirement, the desire to stop drinking. I didn't think I wanted to stop. I wanted desperately to not feel so alone and miserable. But I wasn't convinced yet that alcohol had anything to do with that. I'm glad you told me to keep coming back, and I'm glad I did. No one had ever told me that before, except when I was going to buy the next round. Over time, you helped me find trust again, and I found a sponsor who could share my secrets and still keep me around. She taught me I was not terminally unique and that I judged myself far harder than you did. You showed me acceptance through love and tolerance and helped me to find a better person inside me, not only one you seemed to like, but one I could like too. The only requirement I'm supposed to have in life is a desire to stay sober. When I complicate my life by having any other goal than pursuing sobriety, I notice that I become ungrateful and take it for granted. I keep perspective when I remember that any other problem is just a problem. It's not a drinking problem. I can't stay sober for rewards. I stay sober so that I can survive. My sponsor taught me that anything I put in front of my sobriety, I would lose. So I give up the pursuit of power and authority over anybody or anything. I focus on my primary purpose to stay sober in the spirit of the fifth tradition. And I work the third tradition in a personal way by eliminating all my desires in life other than sobriety. Thus, the beauty of the third tradition is that it restores perspective through an attitude of gratefulness for the miracle of recovery. In the big book, we're told that we have recovered our miracles of mental health. I never thought those words could possibly apply to me. I didn't even know that was something to try to be. The relationship of the third step for me is of the tradition to the third step is profound for me. The third step poses the question, what do I need to do in order to turn my will and my life over to the care of a loving God as I understand him? The third tradition answers that question for me. The only requirement I need to fill in order to turn my will and my life over is a desire to stop drinking. It is unbelievable to me that all the power of the universe is available to care for me if I only have one desire, to stay sober. After tradition one defines the problem, our need for unity, the next 10 traditions ask each of us to make a specific personal sacrifice for the betterment of the unity of AA as a whole. In the third tradition, I am asked to give up the right to say who sits with me in a meeting. And for me, that spells inclusivity and diversity. That's really great for the other guy, but how, I wonder, does that help me? Or my home group, or even AA as a whole? Preparing for today caused me to examine that question, to look at how my recovery has been affected by the third tradition and how it might affect the home group, or AA as a whole. Simplicity and perspective are the words that describe the third tradition. Yet what I discovered was that simple phrase that begins, the only requirement, is actually very complex below the surface and packs quite a wallop in recovery and unity. The results of its practice are woven through the other traditions and even the steps. I'd like to share the effect it has had on my spiritual growth and then the growth of and unity of a home group and AA as a whole, as I have experienced it. I would not be alive if you had not let me in. But what impacted me almost as much is when you told me, when I had to let you in, and when you told me I had to let others in. When I was asked to make the sacrifice of the third tradition, a new dimension came to my recovery. The doors of AA had not been open to all. I would have lost many opportunities to hear new ideas and perspectives of our program from members of other age and ethnic groups with different cultural and spiritual beliefs and practices. Through the years and passing through many groups, I learned from my multicultural friends that I was not alone spiritually or emotionally, that I could possibly receive help from many places, and that there were many ways of approaching God as I understand him. When I heard someone talk of other spirits of protection or a psychic and asking for angels to come, I got a whole new list of possibilities to consider. And those who talked of their belief in no God have some meaningful experience to share if I listen with an open mind. Nothing is different. Each one is as sick and scared as I am or was. And we welcome him because we need him as much as he needs us. I heard differing beliefs, but I also found that most spiritual and religious groups have common threads. They offer a way of healing ourselves and finding happiness. We are all climbing the same mountain by a multitude of different paths. When I learned to identify, not compare, I was able to hear our common pain and walk with you in finding a common solution. I would have missed those opportunities if you and I didn't practice the third tradition. Yesterday, I attended a meeting on varieties of spiritual experiences with many of you. Without the third tradition, I thought that was a powerful meeting. Without the third tradition, we might have missed some of the powerful message that was presented there. I've heard it said they will let anybody in here. Yes, Alcoholics Anonymous will let anyone in, and thank goodness that included you and I. I have observed home groups who were enriched by the differing cultures of its members. Group unity and growth have been vastly enhanced by the challenges they have faced to meet the needs of all their members. At the Early Birds group, on many occasions, we have been drawn to review our format to ensure it meets the needs of all while keeping us on our primary focus. One meeting place was greatly improved when we were required to determine if it met the needs of the physically challenged because someone in a wheelchair had joined our group. Our greeters have waited at the door anxiously to welcome the next person, long-timer or newcomer, man or woman, whatever beliefs. I saw a group that established outreach to the newcomer with a welcome packet and information, and the group grew by leaps and bounds because the newcomer felt the third tradition in action and kept coming back. But most important in all these experiences was the spiritual growth each individual member attained and the bonding and unity that was brought about when we came together to seek common solutions for the good of the whole group, when we continually make a place for all. We learned how to work together as a group to resolve our issues, setting aside our personal interests and beliefs. We no longer needed picnic table meetings after the business meeting because when we come to trust our differences, we trust our group conscience. As we watched each other reach out to assist those in need, we were called to ask ourselves, where can I be of service? We made a commitment amongst ourselves to where we could serve to keep our group strong. We became a group unified in being present for the newcomer, whoever or whatever he was. There was a commitment brought about to work for the group as a whole, using the third tradition to assure our future. Without unity within, I have seen groups die. As Dr. Bob asked when first faced with the dilemma of the third tradition, we too must seek what the master would do. The practice of the third tradition has changed the face of AA as a whole. By the time I arrived on the doorsteps of AA in 1981, as a Caucasian woman, there was no question the door was opened for me. But only Bill Wilson could have imagined AA as it is today, because only Bill among the old-timers of Alcoholics Anonymous had such grandiose, improbable dreams. I wonder how he'd handle Facebook today. In the summer of 1935, there were only two AA members, Bill, a failed Wall Street stockbroker, and Dr. Bob, a practicing surgeon, trying to figure out how they could sober up drunks like them. Over the next 4 years, they would attract 100 new members and not even have a name. Now there are more than 2 million of us worldwide, members of the most successful, most imitated, yet often misunderstood self-help group of the century. Our big book is the Library of Congress list of 100 books that shaped America. Over the last 80 years, the substance of AA, our core literature, and our program of recovery have changed very little. but in terms of the membership and diversity of its members, AA today would be unrecognizable to its pioneers. In the early days, AA members were almost exclusively male, white, middle class, and middle-aged. They were men who had fallen very far in their professions and careers. The AA of today is huge, increasingly international, multi-ethnic, multiracial, cutting across social classes, welcoming of all. A spectacular trend is how young people have streamed into AA the last 20 years. Increasingly, many turn to AA for help far earlier in the stages of their disease. As we grew and diversified, the stigma of alcoholism generally faded. AA was gradually transformed in the public's perception from disbelief and even ridicule to that of an accepted and admired organization. The spread of our 12-step ideology and practices into other countries and the publication of our literature in many languages reflects the broad interpretation our ideology permits across diverse cultures holding different values and beliefs. Thank goodness our founder had the forethought that we should let everyone in. Bill wrote in The Grapevine in 1965, "Let us always try to be inclusive rather than exclusive. Let us remember that each alcoholic among us is a member of AA so long as he or she so declares." The world has changed, and we have to change with it to have a place for the alcoholic of tomorrow to come. May we remember to keep our doors open to all. The third tradition is all about freedom to join. But I learned in this process that it is also about a new freedom to grow. I hope I can answer those inventories right today. I thank God, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you for teaching me that. I am no longer apart from you. And not only do I belong, I am responsible when anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help. Thank you for this amazing opportunity to share.